Therapy Chat Podcast, Episode 102.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hey, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm going to keep this introduction pretty brief because I'm replacing my microphone, so I'm just using earbuds for this portion I'm recording, and it doesn't sound so good. So I'm just going to move through quickly, let you know that today's episode is an interview with Krista Verastro, a registered drama therapist here in Maryland. And I think you're going to find it really interesting. So let's just dig right in.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. Today, we are going to continue a discussion about expressive arts in the fascinating interview I'm going to be having with Krista Verastro, who is a drama therapist in Owings Mills, Maryland. Krista, thanks so much for being on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad you agreed to be on. And it's so funny that you're in Owings Mills, which is like 45 minutes away from where my practice is. And we haven't met in person yet, but at least we're making the connection in this way. And I know we'll take it to real life sometime soon.
Yeah.
So Krista, let's just start out by talking about your work and kind of your background. Can you tell our audience more about yourself and your work?
Sure. So I discovered drama therapy when I was about 15 years old. I first took theater in high school, and I realized my freshman year how wonderful theater was for me. I felt very healed doing the work. I was a child who felt very disempowered for many reasons, and when I discovered theater, it really empowered me. And at that point in my life, I knew I wanted to be some sort of therapist because I just always enjoyed helping people. So there was only one level of theater in my high school, and when that semester was up, I said to the people at my school, hey, I really like theater and I want to do something with it. What are my options? And they said, well, you can retake the course, and instead of doing all the assignments the other kids are going to do that you already did, you can do extra kind of credit or whatever, do some other kinds of papers that would give me the credit since I had done those other ones that were assigned. And so in that process, I was doing some sort of report. I don't remember the topic at the time, but I know that in doing my research, I came across drama therapy and was immediately drawn to the fact that I could combine my love of theater and psychology. So I discovered that it is a master's level program, like any kind of therapy we know. And I knew, okay, well, so I'll just do theater or psychology when I go to college and pursue it as a master's. And so I grew up about an hour outside of New York City and discovered that NYU had a school of individualized study. And I discovered that I could make my own concentration there. So I studied theater and psychology. And actually, there was a drama therapist on staff there. So she really mentored me a lot. And I immediately went on from there to get my master's in drama therapy. And have been in the field ever since, and I am a registered drama therapist is the credential that we get. So I have worked with all sorts of populations in that time. I pretty much say the only thing I haven't really done is inpatient at this point. I've worked with mentally ill people, and I've done prison work. I've done elderly and dementia and all sorts of things. What I fell into, I moved to Maryland 9 years ago, and I actually interviewed for a job the same week I moved, got it, and I ended up there for 8 years. And that was, I know, Laura, you did similar work. It was an agency that does domestic violence, sexual abuse and assault, and human trafficking. So trauma became my niche, and it still is what I mostly do. So last year I started private practice, and I do share space with two art therapists, and one of them was someone I worked with at that agency I just mentioned. And so we luckily have gotten to work together a lot when we see families and stuff and do sessions together. We get to combine our art and drama therapy, which is really cool. So that's where I am currently. And I also do a lot of presenting because people are always fascinated by drama therapy since it is very little known. So I tend to find myself getting a lot of offers for presentations.
So that's great.
Speaking. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you came on to Therapy Chat, because even though I knew you were a drama therapist and we've connected through online in the past, I just don't know that much about it. And mm-hmm. I really think that a lot of people don't know about it. So I hope this discussion will really help those who are listening to kind of think about what therapy can be in a different way. I have to say, I can't believe we haven't run into each other at some point, because I moved to Maryland now about 10 and a half years ago, mm-hmm. and I was working in a sexual and domestic violence program. You know, when I first moved here too, it's like, mm-hmm. how did our paths not cross? Because our counties are right next to each other.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that you are in private practice and you share space with two art therapists and other drama therapists. Is that right?
There's no other drama therapists where I'm at currently, but I know some in the area. The few that are here, I tend to know.
Yeah, because it's a really kind of a small...
Yes. Super small. I could actually tell you how small. If you're, whenever I say this, people are baffled. So
how small?
I was registered 10 years ago. When I got my registration, I was number 374, and that is from the year 1979 when they started. So you get the idea that
in the
I
whole
was
state,
374 in the whole country. The country. So now someone I know got theirs last year, and they were number 6-something. So 600-something. So ever since 1979, from the start of my organization, there's only been 600-something people who've gotten registered in it.
Wow, that's amazing.
So yeah, we're a rare breed.
Yeah, well, and that's, so, I mean, it's wonderful that you're out there and offering this. So let's just talk a little bit more about what drama therapy really is. Can you, I'm sure you can define that for us and describe it.
Actually, I can do both, because when I do talk about it, I do like to give the definitions there are and then talk, break them down a little bit more for
Perfect.
You in layman's terms.
Yeah.
So the two definitions I have to share, one is drama therapy is the systematic and intentional use of drama/theater processes, products, and associations to achieve the therapeutic goals of symptom relief, emotional and physical integration, and personal growth. The other one is drama therapy is an active, experiential approach to facilitating change through storytelling, projective play, purposeful improvisation, and performance. Participants are invited to rehearse desired behaviors, practice being in relationship, expand and find flexibility between life roles, and perform the change they wish to be and see in the world.
Incorporating one of my favorite quotes there at the end.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a lovely way of putting it. But those are the technical definitions, which I know sound wordy. So basically the idea is using theater techniques in therapy. So just like the way I liken it is, most people are familiar with art therapy and music therapy because, again, they have more numbers and more people doing it. It's the same idea. It's instead of using art as the medium or music as the medium, drama therapy uses drama as the medium. And what I actually say about it is, to me, drama is all the arts. You've got visual art and drama. You have movement. There may be music. So to me, it really is all the arts combined. And what I tell people, when I was a kid, actually, my love was music. I played clarinet and was really good at it. And that was... I played by ear. I was like talented at it too. And like I said, theater came later for me. But when it came to being a therapist, it made a lot of sense to me to do drama therapy, because when you think about it, we're always in role. So one of the premises is that we play different roles. So my role right now is different than the role I have with my husband, or the role I have with my parents, or the role I have with my clients. So you have all these different roles, and everybody has to sort of find a way to be comfortable with the multiple roles they play. And so in a therapeutic lens, we look at what role is somebody maybe stuck in. You know, do they associate as a victim role? Do they associate as a sick person role, an angry person? So looking at roles that people get stuck in and trying to find better balance in roles, what roles do they want to try on and be more of and strengthen? So that's one of the big, we heard that word in those definitions, but that's what it really means, is the roles that we play in our everyday life.
Mm.
And one thing I could say too, in the definition, it brought up performance. So one of the things I constantly have to tell people, yes, there is drama therapy that can include performance. I have done performances, and I can give you a summary of that. Is, for example, I did a Black History Month play. I was working on an HIV/AIDS unit when I lived in New York City, and they wanted to do for Black History Month a play about it. And so I don't know how who suggested it, but I go where the client goes, as any good therapist does. And they wanted to explore what it would be like to do a talk show in heaven with all these leaders in Black history. Mm. So each client in the group got to choose someone they resonated with. And so there were people like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, you know, all these famous people, and each person got to play one of them. And I got to be the talk show host and interview them about what they brought to the world. You know, so what, and you mentioned your favorite quote. So what change did those people bring to the world? And so they got to see, like, what was it like? Rosa Parks, were you scared when you had to stand up for yourself on that bus? And it was a really neat exploration about being human. Another example I have is when I worked at a day treatment center for people with mental illness. We did a play that, again, the clients came up with the theme, but the theme was they wanted to reverse roles with the staff. That was the whole theme of the play, was mm-hmm. them becoming the staff and the staff becoming the clients. And without me doing a whole lot of guiding, it was beautiful because they came to the theme of the story ended up being the rules are in place for a reason. That when they discovered how, when they were in the role of being structured and being the authority, they realized that when people don't want to listen to the rules, chaos happens. Mm. And so they came to that all on their own. You know, like I said, I did very little guiding, but it was a great play, a lot of comedy, but also a serious message about, okay, we have structure for a reason. It's therapeutic to have structure. So yes, performance does happen in drama therapy, but also it can be used one-on-one in individual sessions and group sessions, family sessions, however other therapy is used. I use it, drama therapy is used in those purposes. So in that context, when it's more one-on-one or group work, it's more about reversing roles in an improvisational form, storytelling and having people take on roles, mask making and exploration in that, monologues with that, lots of creative things that are more improvisational. So there's not a performance aspect to it. So they're both therapeutic. They just have a slightly different end goal. Like I would say with performance, it's really nice when you want to share a message. For example, there's a lot of drama therapists who use it to spread messages about domestic violence or about autism or mental illness. So trying to get rid of stigmas, basically. So the performance aspect can be more about trying to connect people on a larger level. And there's a better chance of sort of that accomplishment feeling, that pride that people can take in it, and a team building effort that comes with doing plays. But one-on-one, it's, some other different goals that we work on.
Wow, there's so much to it.
There really is, yeah.
Some words that stood out to me in the two definitions that you gave that I think were thought-provoking just in being included in it, and I don't know that everyone would have even caught them or was thinking about how they what they mean, so I want to back up a little and ask you.
Absolutely.
I jotted down active, experiential, and mm-hmm. integrative or integration.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how, I guess, expressive arts therapies and how drama therapy are active, experiential, yes. and integrative, and what that means?
Okay, so I'm going to do best I can and be eloquent here.
Okay.
So experiential, meaning rather than just talking, we're getting up and putting it into action. So again, that can be role playing, mask making, monologues, storytelling in different ways that we're going to enact it. There's puppetry. Using a lot of it looks like play therapy, by the way, if any of this sounds familiar for people listening who are familiar with that, there's a lot of overlap in some of the approach. And so that experiential piece is doing action rather than just talking about it.
The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
We all know that small actions can make a big difference in our lives. I know for me, I can be in a terrible mood, go out somewhere and see a stranger, make eye contact and just smile at them and find suddenly I feel good. Whether it's practicing mindfulness a few minutes each day, movement practices, small actions can have big benefits, like how taking care of your gut can support whole body health. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. Your body is an ecosystem, and great health starts in the gut. Your gut is a central hub for various pathways through the body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, our immune systems, and more. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living, code 25LIVING.
Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months. Can you say how experiential work does something emotionally?
So, a couple of thoughts. When we talk, it often can feel very overwhelming, or on the other hand, it could feel very cerebral, right? So in the creative arts therapies, and I know because I do present about this a lot and I talk to a lot of other creative arts therapists in general, there's a theory we all have, and I don't know that we all word it the same. In drama therapy, it's called aesthetic distance. And with aesthetic distance, the idea is to have a balance between thinking and feeling. So when we use the word over distance, a person is too removed from their emotions. And if they're under distance, they're too close to their emotions. So they can't even do anything because they're so caught up in their emotions. And we know the clients tend to be more of that in therapy, I think, than people who are over distance don't even tend to seek therapy for the most part. Although there's some people, I'm sure you know too, that there's some people who sit there and tell you of their trauma and they have no attachment to it. That it's like the emotion is so disconnected.
So that's what I see a lot, that people just aren't really connected to it.
It's just like, I'm sure you know, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners know, with trauma, you have dissociation or you could have hyperarousal. So there's sort of those two extremes, like one is overfeeling and one is underfeeling. And so in this idea of aesthetic distance, you want to find that balance of feeling and thinking. And so when you're talking, it's hard to sometimes... you become over emotional and you can't really work through the emotions, or again, you don't really touch the emotions and you sort of need to do that to heal through them. So when you actually move it to the realm of experientials, there's a safety. One of the big premises in drama therapy and other creative arts therapies is that when you put it onto an object that's not you, so a lot of therapists who are listening probably know about projective techniques, right? We think of the old school, the ink blots and different things. The idea with the creative arts therapies is when you're externalizing those feelings into art and drama and different mediums like that, you are taking it outside of yourself so it feels safer because it doesn't feel like it's you, but really obviously we know it is you. So it simultaneously feels safer because it's not really me, but at the same time it allows you to explore me in a deeper way. So, for example, if someone puts a mask on their face, they're hiding their facial expressions, which might feel safe because, like, oh, people can't see how I'm feeling. I feel safer. I don't feel as vulnerable. But it also allows the body to become freer. And so stuff might come through the body that might not have been seen otherwise. And so it simultaneously hides parts of the selves and shows parts of the selves. So it's an interesting way of looking at it. That's one of the things I love about what I do, is that talking, I'm a talker, obviously. I'm very chatty. And there are clients I actually do talk with the whole session or most of the session, but I bring up the creative elements where I feel that they get stuck. But I think, yeah, I think experiential sometimes has to happen for things to go deeper, for it to feel safe enough to go into a scary territory, or just to get a different perspective. Because when you externalize it, you do get a different perspective on it than if you're just talking out loud, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah. And if I may piggyback to what you said, so about the integrative part.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, a lot of the work you do, since I do follow you on social media and stuff, in terms of the holistic, the sort of treating not just the emotional realm, but what I always say, I treat the different domains as a person who does experiential therapy. So not just those emotions, but also physical, right? So in drama therapy, we could do things that involve getting the body in there, acting things out, movement of sorts. And one of the other things I'll just mention with that is as I'm sure you've come across in all your trauma studies, is the idea that repetitive movement helps heal trauma. And so if you're doing things in drama that are repetitive, then that's healing. It's changing the neural pathways. So again, I treat the physical realm too, the social realm. Obviously, even if it's just me and a client, that's still building social bonds. Not that talk therapy doesn't build social bonds, because it does, but there's something I actually say when I present sometimes is there's a difference when you tell a story and you enact a story. It becomes different from the owner of the story versus the participant in the story, right? So when you talk and I'm sort of sharing my story with you, it's my story only. But when we act it out together, it becomes our story. So there's this component. Mm. And then obviously it gets even bigger when you do something that does involve group work or performance work, where it becomes a shared experience and a bonding experience. So there is that social element.
I would think there's something about the trust of allowing oneself to be vulnerable to do the performance or the movement together, mm-hmm. rather than just sitting in the chair where you know what to expect. The other person's sitting, you know what they're going to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And in terms of, I was also going to say with the social part of it, that the role reversals and role plays help to create empathy. And, you know, again, with social roles, that can help people explore social roles. Like, oh, I never knew what it felt like to be a mother, or, you know, I never knew what it felt like to be a significant other. Whatever it is, somebody might get the chance to try out a social role that they didn't know. And so they have a better understanding of it. So I think it could be Actually, a lot of drama therapy came out of social justice movements. Mm. I don't know if you've ever heard of Augusto Boal, who was famous for, in Brazil, taking theater to the people, the oppressed people, and trying to get rid of oppression through theater. So that was, yeah, one of the influences in the field of drama therapy. So, yeah, so the social aspect is pretty cool. And also the cognitive domain, I would say, something we also treat, thought stuff, problem solving, right? And so that's really important, getting to, again, try out different roles and problem solve scenes, rehearse scenes. If someone has anxiety, rehearsing for the future. Somebody has depression, maybe looking at what could we have changed if we can go back and change something about the past. Or for me, a lot of nightmare work. So with trauma, obviously people have nightmares. So sometimes I'll have them change the ending to a nightmare, whether it's through acting or through sand tray and using figurines. So the cognitive domain is another important one as far as to me what integrative means in my therapy practice. And and within that too is also CBT type of work. I use a lot of scales to show, especially when I do groups. There's something called a spectrogram that actually comes out of psychodrama, which I know you and I might get to talking about how psychodrama and drama therapy are a little different, but using scales on the side of the room. So on one side, if I said, how do you feel today? On one side of the room might be, I'm terrible. This is the worst I've ever felt. On the other side is, it's awesome. It's the best day ever. And then I'd say, place yourself anywhere on the scale, wherever you'd like. So if you feel you're smack in the middle, go in the middle. If you feel like you're more happy than bad, then go somewhere towards that end, you know? And so that there's a way of concretizing what someone might feel in a different way than just talking about it. So yeah, so I feel like an integrative practice helps treat all these different domains that we have in our lives rather than just talking about emotions.
Yeah. Wow, this sounds so great.
Yep.
Sometimes I wish I could learn everything that my guests know how to do, but then, you know, I'm just glad to know that other people know how to do these amazing things.
Right.
So I do want to talk about psychodrama and how drama therapy and psychodrama are different. Because I didn't learn about psychodrama until, well, I'd heard about it once in grad school. And I remember we did this one, our teacher kind of just led us through without explaining anything ahead of time. She was like, you know, here's your script, here's yours, here's yours, here's yours. And we're all going to, you know, act this out. And the rest of you are the audience. But it was the most powerful thing. And everyone who was watching was just crying. I mean, I don't know if that was necessarily great in terms of, like, you know, how some people were triggered and, you know, all that was happening. But it was just, it was like from in one moment we were dragging ourselves into this Saturday morning class, like, oh, God, you know, just tired and complaining. And the next moment we're like totally like transfixed watching what's happening and just having this huge emotional experience. So that was how I initially learned about it. And then, as you and I talked about before in Lisa Ference's trauma certificate, psychodrama was a part of the teaching. And I was fascinated by what it can do. But when I met you and I heard you were a drama therapist, I assumed it included psychodrama. So now please clear up my misconceptions and help us understand the difference.
Sure. So psychodrama was first. Psychodrama actually, the knowledge I have about the history of it, it was around the 1920s it became big. And drama therapy ended up veering off in around the 70s after experimental theater sort of became a big thing. So the reason it veered off was because people who were interested in it wanted more freedom, because psychodrama is actually pretty structured. So within that structure, there is improv, but it has a structure. So the structure tends to be a warm-up, an action, and then the sort of processing period. So usually a warm-up only lasts about 5 to 10 minutes, and it's just to get people sort of in the moment, spontaneous moment, kind of come to the here and now. So they will do a drama activity. So an example I can give you, say, for example, if I was doing a group and I put out a bunch of hats and I said, everybody take a hat, and then you put it on and take on a character, and then have the group interact as these characters, right? So it's a little warm up to get everyone in the same place. Then usually what happens is the psychodramatist, who usually is the director, would say, All right, everybody who has a burning story that they want to look at today, let's have you tell the story that you're thinking of sharing, and anybody who resonates with that would get to vote on it. So basically, everyone shares the story that they're thinking of, and then a vote is taken to see which one resonates with the most people, and that story usually gets to be enacted. And through that enaction process, there's actually words. I don't know if you learned this, but the protagonist and the auxiliaries. So the protagonist is the main person who gets chosen. The auxiliaries are the people who help with the enactment. So they might play other roles in the story. So the enactment itself can be a past situation that feels unfinished. It could be a fantasy, a dream, something in the future somebody wants. So it could be any of these things that get externalized. And then the protagonist gets to explore it, but the auxiliaries come in to help fill in the roles, like I said. So if you have unfinished business with a parent, right, then there'd be that parent, and maybe the other parent would be another auxiliary would play, maybe siblings, maybe friends, maybe a significant other. So there's this whole sort of scene that happens, and that's probably what you're talking about, because I know myself from having done psychodrama that, you know, there can be some really intense, especially the ones that do examine real life things from the past, can be very, very intense. So it's a very structured sort of look at something. Again, there's improv within there, because the director might decide, okay, you just asked your pretend father a question, but I want you to answer it, so I'm going to have you reverse roles with him, and you play your father, and let's see what you think he would say. So that's sort of the structure. And then at the end, after that enactment occurs, there's the processing period, which is an interesting thing, because it's not an analysis of the situation. It's more of a sharing what resonated for people. So I really related. So when you had that moment with your father, or that image of you and your father hugging resonated with me. So people share more like that, as opposed to analyzing what happened. And the reason why is actually because the thought is, if it was intense, you don't want to like have an open wound and go too deep, and then the person's not closed up. So it's more just a digesting period for the protagonist, and a period for sharing so that people can bond over it. So drama therapy, the way I tell people about it is that warm-up period that was more metaphorical with the hat thing that I shared, that's a little bit more like what we drama therapists typically do. We work a little bit more in metaphor and more improv-based, but that's not totally true, because people really do mix it up as they need. So again, going to that idea of distance, if I have a client who I want them to get closer to their emotion, I am going to do something that's less metaphorical and more direct. But on the other hand, if someone's overwhelmed by their emotions, I don't want to be like, okay, talk to your dead mother over there, right? I want to do something that's more metaphorical. Like, okay, let's get some finger puppets that represent a mother and a child. So that way it feels safer, less close to home. So that's a big part of the training that people like me go through, is learning how to navigate that. So in art therapy, they have the same kind of ideas, as you wouldn't use finger paints with somebody who's dysregulated. You need to use a lot of structure, right? Same with music therapy. You wouldn't do drumming with someone who's aggressive. So that's the idea, is we're trained to know when to use these different techniques. And what I will say, so psychodrama tends to use more psychodramatic techniques, and drama therapy tends to use more projective techniques. So to give you the gist of what that means, is psychodramatic techniques are the me roles. They're roles that are still me, but they're different parts of me, and that kind of thing. And the projective techniques are the ones that are not me. So again, the puppets and the masks and the dolls and the stories of characters you take on, those things are all not me, right? They're very distanced. So right. Drama therapy, again, tends to use more of that metaphor. But again, yes, it gets very, it's hard to explain, because we kind of just go where we need to go. So it's not always one or the other. But that's a little bit of the breakdown, how psychodrama and drama therapy look a little bit different.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You're so knowledgeable about this.
Yeah, actually, I talk with people about my identity as a drama therapist. I don't know, when I retire one day, I'm going to be like, I don't know what to do, because for most of my life, I've been a drama therapist. Yeah, it's a passion.
It's wonderful. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
Are you going through menopause or perimenopause? It can be a struggle to find comfort in your body with night sweats, hot flashes, and so many other uncomfortable symptoms. Hormone Harmony is a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, created by Happy Mammoth. They are dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout women's lives. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today.
The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
What you said about when you were 15 not being very empowered until you found drama, it's clear that once you found it, you knew, because I sure wish at 15 I had been so clear about what I wanted to be when I grew up and how to get there and all that. I was very, very much less. I didn't figure it out until I was about 29. But that's okay. You know, we're all on our own journey, but it's pretty inspiring how, you know, it just lit a fire in you and you ran with it.
One thing I will say is I often get people thinking it's just for kids, and it's not. Adults benefit from it too. I see all ages. I've literally seen from 2 to over 100, and everyone can benefit from it. And again, a good therapist knows how to make it appropriate for the client they're working with. So with the kids I work with, it does look a little bit more like play therapy, might be a lot more improv-y. But with adults, it might tend to be more, a little bit more of like that psychodrama stuff I mentioned, or like, for example, I use a lot of poetry. I like to take a poem that's like somebody else wrote and then do other versions of it. For example, there's a really cool poem I actually did in a workshop years ago, and I sort of borrowed the ideas, as many of us do. But it's called Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters, I think is the exact title. And it's really a cool little poem that says, like, I was walking down the street, I fell in a hole. Took me a long time to get out. Then the next chapter is, I was walking down the street, I saw the hole, I still fell in it.
Oh, I know that one.
Oh, you do? Yeah, so it's like this process of, you know, we learn, we make the mistakes, we see it coming, we still make it, and then eventually we get to a place where we avoid that street altogether, right?
Yeah.
So in drama therapy, an example of using a poem like that would be to say, write your own journey, write your own 5 chapters about what your journey's been, and let's enact it, right? So let's enact you falling into the hole, so to speak. Like when I did it, I talked about the castle. I don't even know where. I'm very creative myself, obviously, why I got into this work. But my poem ended up being, I was a princess and I kept letting people in the castle who took advantage of me. And then my castle kept getting robbed. So then eventually it was like, well, then I built a moat. And then I put some alligators in the moat. And I learned to not always answer the door when somebody knocked. And so it was my own journey of putting up my boundaries. Yeah. I'm sure many of us therapists have been through that. So, and then in that workshop, we got to enact our own poems that we created based on that first poem. So with adults, it might look a little bit different. But yeah, so it is for all ages, though. I don't like having to always correct people that it's not just for kids.
Yeah. So do you use poems and things like that with little kids too? Or is it more something that they need to be a little bit older?
I haven't really tried poems so much with the kids. What I do with younger, I've done it with groups of teens I've worked with, to do a group poem. So to have each person add a line to the poem. So for example, even when I do presentations now as a demonstration, I'll often use, let's say if we're talking about our strengths. So each person in the room can add a line about our strengths, you know, and then sometimes you could even enact it as you speak the poem then, like, we are tough, and then put on a pose that's a tough pose, right? So that's another thing in drama therapy. We do some sculpting where you could have people sculpt as almost like a frozen statue, using their bodies to sculpt emotions. So that's a neat aspect too.
That's really cool. And that's just so, when you use your body like that in representing something emotional, it's really different.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very cool. So another question I bet you get a lot, but if you don't, it's something I was wondering, is do people have to have, do they have to be really creative, or do they have to have like a drama or, you know, creative background to be able to participate?
No. So actually, when you have somebody who's very product oriented, it can get in the way of them looking at their process. Like even a lot of my clients who don't consider themselves creative, they're constantly going, oh, this is terrible, can I start over? Oh, this drawing's awful, I made a mistake. And I always have to encourage, this isn't going in a gallery, this is just for us to explore something. So no creativity or experience with the creative arts is needed for any of the creative arts therapies. The idea is just to look at them in a different way, look at those feelings and those thoughts that we have in a different way. It helps when somebody's open to it, because I certainly have clients where I'll say something and they'll be like, I really don't want to try that. And I'm like, just bear with me if you can. Sometimes, you know, like I do tell people I never force, and I always respect if there's just something it's really, really uncomfortable. But sometimes I also encourage at the same time, you know, it might be uncomfortable just because it's new, but trust me, like I am trained in this, and I wouldn't be telling you this if I didn't think it was going to ultimately have a good effect for you. Yeah, it helps when people are open-minded to the ideas that are presented, the different techniques.
And do people come to you specifically looking for drama therapy? You know, or does anyone ever just show up who doesn't know that you're a drama therapist, or they didn't pick up on that detail?
So It's a good question. It's interesting. I actually recently had the first person reach out looking for drama therapy groups specifically. Most of the time, because it is so little known, most people do not seek it out. And actually, I struggle with how to even advertise myself in that way, because I'm like, on one hand, people think, oh, isn't that an automatic niche right there that you're a drama therapist and you're so unique? But no, because people don't know it, it doesn't really help to advertise that aspect in a way. Mm-hmm. And people, I think, get intimidated by it. Again, they see it and they think it's like, oh, that's for kids, or, you know, something where they don't feel it's fitting.
Yeah.
The other thing I learned is drama therapy is more like a modality in a way, whereas like I've realized that people are looking for their symptoms. So they're not necessarily looking for, as you know, sometimes there's clients who are looking for EMDR or CBT, but most of the time they're just looking for a therapist that treats anxiety or depression or trauma or whatever, right? And so that's more what I focus on when I share with people what I do therapy-wise. But the beauty about what I do, I also tell people, is in the world, it's come to be that creative arts therapists in general are often seen as adjunct therapists. When you look at hospitals and stuff, that they're often secondary therapists. Like, a person will have a main therapist they see weekly, and then us creative arts therapy people are leading groups and different things like that. It's just kind of been the trend everywhere. And I think it's changing, but it's a cool thing that I could actually, when I do talk with other therapists and say, hey, you might have a client you feel stuck with just talking, and then if you still want to work with them because you have a good rapport and things are still happening, but you want them to have another angle to this, I could work in conjunction, right? So sometimes there are clients that do want that sort of like, you know, EMDR, again, to use that as an example, that sometimes someone will have a therapist they just do EMDR with and keep going to someone they've already had a rapport with for the other stuff. So that's one thing I do tell other therapists. It's like, yeah, you have a client that you feel they just need something to supplement what you're doing with them, then I could do that work too. So yeah, it's rare. It's rare that someone will seek a drama therapist. And it's also rare to ever see a job looking for a drama therapist to hire, just because, again, it's super, super unknown in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, it's clearly, I know from what you're saying that the work must be very powerful, and I'm certain it's very effective with your clients, particularly since, as you know, you and I both share the work in trauma. I have no question that what you're doing would be very powerful for people who have trauma, especially complex trauma, stuff that's nonverbal that they don't have a way to express, or they are worried about having to relive it by talking about it over and over. You know, of course, that's what people think happens, and it isn't what happens. But, you know, a movement or a way to do experiential work and Santre and all the ways of enacting roles that you talked about, I have no doubt that that would be very powerful for people. So I hope some people who are listening get a little different perspective about drama therapy through this interview.
Yeah, another example I can give you, just to give you another idea of how I work with trauma with it. One of the things when I present, I talk about this case study. I had a teen who I worked with who had been sexually abused. And one of the rituals I use, a big part of drama therapy is to use rituals in typically the beginning and the end of session, especially for kids who have ADHD or autism or something where they need that structure, especially doing something to start and end the session so they get in that habit of knowing the structure. So one ritual I did, though, which was not a beginning and ending kind of ritual, is to talk about the wounded child self and going on a journey to be reborn. So this sort of metaphorical rebirth after trauma. Mm-hmm. So this client made a little figure out of clay with crutches and stitches and didn't have any hair, was frowning with a tear. And so I asked, I had her give it a character name. I don't remember offhand what she named it, but, you know, obviously had to do with being broken and, you know, in a bad place. And so I asked her, how can we help heal this wounded self? What journey does it need to go on? So the sand tray became a beach, and I had a amusement park toy set. And so that became a adventure at the amusement park. She went and gave it a good get well card, and she gave it a badge, like a courage badge. And so she took it through this ritualistic journey to give it some healing. And then at the end, because it was made of clay, I had her change it, how it felt after the rebirth, and I had her give it a new name. So in the end, she put a smile, she erased the tear, she put hair on the head, the stitches were fading, and you could tell she was on her way to healing. So that's another example of enacting a ritual for therapy sake.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I can see how, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, you tell a story, tell a different ending, but when you're staying in that cognitive place of just talking and not doing something that's more experiential, like mm-hmm. the sand tray and the creating the figure, you know, you can still remain very detached from it, like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Well, Krista, this has been just absolutely fascinating. I am so grateful that you took the time to be on Therapy Chat today. Do you have anything that you're offering that you would want to let people know about and how to get in touch with you?
So I have things that I'm thinking of doing as far as like one day workshops for people to test out. I've had some thoughts about different things. So I hopefully will have that in the coming months is a thought. And I do have a website that I will post that kind of stuff when it comes. But I also am writing a blog, and my first 5 entries, I think, were about drama therapy specific, about concepts that we use in it and giving some practical examples of how I use it. Actually, the one I just shared, I do think I have in one of them. So that's there if people want to learn a little bit more about drama therapy, follow my blog, and I do talk about it. I just posted this week about a metaphor, you looking at flowers and how we could learn from flowers about self-care. So you could follow me. My website is my name, which is, the website is www.kristaverrastro.com. And I am presenting for people who are professionals and might want to learn more about it. I'm presenting August 6th, I think it is. It's a Sunday in August. I'm presenting about group work with adolescents. I did present in early March about trauma and drama therapy, and that is through the Chesapeake Beach Professional Seminars.
Oh, okay.
So that's on their website.
So that's in for those of us in Maryland?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And I'll be sure to put that information, including your link to your website, in the show notes for this episode so everybody can find it, especially people who are listening while they're driving and don't get a chance to write it down. I think that what you're doing is wonderful, and I'm so grateful that you were my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thanks so much for listening to my interview with Krista Verrastro. Apologies again for the tinny quality of this part that I'm recording here, and I'll have a new microphone soon, so that problem should go away. I know Pete, my audio engineer, hates listening to this type of tinny recording. Thanks for putting up with me, Pete. And for all of you listening, thanks so much. And I'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.